接着我们邀请到 Andrew Davidoff 为我们发表 Exchange Active Think。We are honored to have Andrew Davidoff who will give a brief introduction of Exchange Active Think. Let's welcome.
Today I'm going to introduce you to ActiveSync protocols in a little bit more details, deeper details than it's usually being done. I'm going to go into specifics of how you can do things. And here are my objectives for this talk. I want to give you some starting points.Give you some general understanding of features of Exchange ActiveSync and set you up to explore on your own. So first of all, what it is? It's a synchronization protocol of Exchange Server. It is unique in this sense because other protocol families in Exchange are not necessarily synchronization.Like MIPI was designed for online first, and then cached mode synchronization was introduced in 2003. EWS is online, it has synchronization mode, but it doesn't, it's not how it is typically being used. So what it really means? It means that server and client maintain their own representation of the data independently.And synchronize their knowledge about the data from time to time. What it allows to happen is that client can be offline and user can work offline without having any immediate limitations on the use of the device. This protocol is optimized to work on high latency of, generally speaking, just poor networks.It's based on WBXML. It's a binary XML, which allows for much more compressed traffic on the wire. We don't transmit XML tags in text mode. In text, it's just real short numbers. It enables mobile clients to use email, calendar, contacts, and tasks. It also gives access to document libraries.And by the way, if you have questions, please feel free to ask while I'm talking. So what are typical users? First of all, mobile phones. This is target audience. This is what this protocol was initially designed to work with. Tablets are also mobile devices, and they are using ActiveSync heavily today.This protocol is known to work well with high-speed connections as well, so it is quite universal in terms of network requirements. Desktop applications are also using it. For example, Windows 8 modern mail application uses ActiveSync. Hotmail is using ActiveSync as well. Hotmail servers are implementing ActiveSync protocol andOutlook client, the big Outlook. If you configure, if you use Hotmail or Outlook.com, they're using ActiveSync. I cannot say that it is, like, some of that is being, I know that it's being moved to the cloud, and it's becoming to use more advanced protocols as well.Important to note, not all Exchange features are accessible through ActiveSync. MIPI, RPC, and EWS provide more advanced features. But it has quite significant list of features, quite impressive actually. So agenda for today. I'll talk about versions of Exchange ActiveSync.Introduce you to protocols, open specifications. At this point, I will give you some starting points where to start. I'll talk, and after that, I'll move into details. I'll talk about device management or provisioning, things that must happen before client can even talk to the server. Talk about how to use email, calendar, and contacts, going into major commands that are being used there. Introduce you to auto-discover for mobile clients, for EAS clients, and talk about advantages and limitations of this protocol. ActiveSync has very well designed virtual negotiation. Today it has 5 documented versions that are in use. And I just want to give you some history of them. Version 2.5 was first version written by Exchange Server team. ActiveSync existed before that in some form, but this is first version that was really shipped with Exchange Server, written by Exchange Server, and it was living inside Exchange Server. 2007 introduced 12.0, basically it was big rewrite. Backward compatibility is always maintained by the way, but 12.0 is a big step forward. 12.1 further enhanced it. Then in Exchange 2010, we introduced 14.0. And 14.1 shipped with SP1 of 2010. That is the latest version available today. Exchange Server 2013 also supports all of those. It doesn't mean that a new version will not come up at some time. And version negotiation of this protocol is very helpful when we want to introduce new features and not affect compatibility with existing clients. Version negotiation needs to happen first. It's documented in MSAS HTTP. Basically, client sends options command to the server. Here's an example of the request. And server responds with list of protocol versions that it supports. So this is a list of the versions that is being supported by in this particular call. And it's expected that client will choose the best version it can work with. But it's up to the client to choose which one it's using. And it sends this version every time it sends request to the server. Let's talk about features of different versions. As I said, ActiveSync existed before 2005, and it supported mail, calendar, and contacts. 2.5 introduced direct push. Before that, there was just pull. What it means is that when mail arrives, client has a way to be notified immediately. Access to global address book, S/MIME support, synchronization of tasks was added. Can you hear me? Is okay? Good. Device provisioning and remote wipe, I will talk about them in more details later. 12.0, a lot of new features. HTML messages, before that it was just plain text. Fast message retrieval means that we are normally, starting with this version, only part of the message being transferred in initial synchronization. And then there is a way to request more if needed. Search was enhanced. We added access to document libraries. Pin reset now is being supported. Device security enhanced. Auto discovery service was first added in this version of Exchange. Out of office configuration, you can configure out of office Exchange. ActiveSync client can configure out of office configuration messages. Actually, two of them. There is one for internal and one for external. Follow up flux and new policies for provisioning. 12.1. Further optimization of traffic on the wire, header compression, improvements which targeted battery life. So the way how client and server just in general communicate changed slightly to let client support less often and conserve the battery. Push sync was improved. Remote wife confirmation was introduced, and new policies for device provisioning, a lot of new policies for device provisioning. 14.0, conversation view, so, which came with change to server 2010, conversation view, node synchronization. FreeBSD status can now be retrieved through this protocol. Common context with OVA is you can synchronize list of contacts you use most often. Lunar calendar is supporting. Synchronizing or reply state is when client can show that, hey, you already replied to this message. SMS synchronization support was added there and new policies for provision. 14.1, a few more improvements. Address book photos, message diffs. This is interesting. That's when you reply or forward in 14.1, only changed portion of email needs to be transmitted. I will talk about this in more details and show how it's being done. Improvements in provisioning, support for IRM, information rights management, which is actually interesting. And new policy for that. Any questions so far? So let's talk about protocols of ActiveSync. I put together, okay, first of all, there are 15 open specifications. Those are normative documents that represent ActiveSync documentation set. This is everything about ActiveSync. Those documents, if you read through them, you know that they are initially difficult to read. It's, you need to get used to it. But this is true documentation. This is true description of what is going on over the wire, what kind of messages go over the wire, and what kind of rules needs to be followed by client and server for protocol to work. First two documents in this set are transport layer. Represent transport layer. MSAS CMD, the third one, is the biggest one in the set. It's command reference. Its size of this document is roughly half of the entire set. And it describes all commands that are being used, but in some of them in generic terms. What it means? There are commands that are being used by email, calendar, contacts, tasks, and so on, like sync command or search. And they have common parts, which are described in MSIS CMD. And then they have specifics for email, specifics for calendar and so and other classes. Those specifics are described in separate documents. And those documents are listed below, support for email, calendar, contacts, tasks, documents, and notes, all based on CMD, MSIS CMD. Conversations and write management are built on top of MSIS email, they are email extensions. And SMS support is somewhat standalone. Last two, those are references used by across all documentation set. Here's the same with information in like diagram form. This is transport layer, protocols based on MSIS CMD references, and MSIS Prof provisioning protocol, something that must be used before client can ever talk to exchange, to the server. So where to start? I suggest starting with MSIS CMD. It has very extensive set of examples. Study them. section 3.1, client and server behavior, it describes the rules that must be followed. And it's written in a way that is more or less easy to understand. It's not normative language. It is not strict normative language. It's quite readable, and it refers heavily into normative sections talking about exact messages. Second one, WBXML. This is transport layer. It just must be implemented before client can even send anything to the server using this protocol. And we have sample implementation of this in ActiveSync test suites. The test suites are available for free for download. If you want to explore ActiveSync, this is one of the ways of doing it. Provisioning. What it is device management. It is strictly enforced by a server. Device must go through provisioning before it can talk to the server. And it's a four-step process. First, client sends provision request. Server responds with policy key, temporary policy key, that needs to be used later, and list of policies. At this point, client needs to decide if it can support those policies. And second, if it needs to enforce any policies. Example of that is policies that requests password or PIN on the device. Most of organizations require that you use password or PIN on the device before you can access the data. So what's happening at this point, client tells you, hey, you must enable PIN. Please enter it. And only when this is done, it will continue with provisioning. It will send provision request saying, yes, everything's good. I can enforce your policies. And at this point, server responds with permanent policy key. This policy key is used on each and every request that client sends to the server. Provision can be requested in any point. Like for any request from the client, server can respond with provisioning error asking to do provisioning. Reason for that, policies can change at any point, and client needs to be ready to change and to enforce new policies. There are several types of policies, there are a lot of them actually. A big set of password related policies, like device password enabled, type of password, minimum password length. Inactivity time is an interesting policy server can enforce. How long the mobile device can be in active state before it locks down. The max device password failed attempts is interesting as well. If user exceeds this number, the device must do local wipe. It is recommended that what's being wiped is only information from the company, like from that was delivered to the client through ActiveSync, through this particular connection. But it's up to device to implement this right. Some devices just wipe everything. There are security-related policies as well, and few others. ABQ, allow block quarantine support, is different from provisioning in terms that provisioning is based on policies. This is based on device type. Administrator can choose which devices can connect to the server, regardless of policies. And there are two ways of enforcement, either through black list or white list. Supporting ActiveSync, client sends device information. It's the very beginning of conversation, one of initial steps, like before first sync, client sends device information to the server. And from that point on, server knows what the device it is and in big details. Phone number actually allows to show different phones in OWA. OWA has support for mobile devices administration. remote backup. That's important thing for enterprises. It's a way to erase company data if something is wrong with device. It can be triggered by Exchange administrator or mailbox user. As I said, our Outlook web application has support for that. Go to options, mobile devices. You will see a list of your mobile devices that are connected and you can request remote wire. You can do a few other interesting things there, like request log for troubleshooting. It's a multi-step process. First, server responds to the next client request. So client send request, server responds. You need to wipe. The status code 140. Client submit provision request saying, yes, I got it. Are you serious? Server responds, yes, I'm serious, do it. And then client sends acknowledgement. And only after that, it wipes the device. It cannot send acknowledgement after wipe because it will not be able to communicate. Local wipe is not communicated to the server. Server has no idea if one device was locally wiped. So let's talk about how to do since initial flow that is prescribed by this protocol. First is provision, I talked about this as well. Second is folder sync. Client obtains folder hierarchy. What's interesting about this command, this is the only time when server sends folder names and folder IDs. Client needs to take note of it, and from that point on, only folder IDs are being used. You will never see folder name on the wire after this command. Sync is most typical, it's just the most used command. It is a way for client to retrieve data and then submit changes to the server, but not for all elements. Sync command always send changing sync key, and this is a way for server to know that nothing was lost. Yes, client has my last sync key, and it is synchronized to the last point I know. Typically, sync command retrieves only part of the message, and if user requests more, then item operations is being used. Let's look in more details how to do email, calendar, and contacts. Email. Send mail, quite simple command if you look at the example here. It's really short. The complexity is here. You need to come. You need to build my messaging presentation. Mime must be supported by Exchange client, and it is well-known standard. Client ID in this request is being used to prevent duplicate messages. It's something that sets. Being generated by the client, it just needs to be unique. And the way how server uses it is this. Client can lose confirmation that message was sent. In this case, client will send it again. And it will send it with the same client ID. So this is a way for server to know that I already sent this message, I don't need to send it again. And save and send items element. This one is the way to tell server moves this to send items when it is sent. Client is never moves mail to send items. Smart reply and smart forward is what I briefly mentioned. The way to transmit just actual reply or forward without transmitting entire message. The trick here is that server has message that is being replied or forwarded. It has all of it. All it really needs is change the part, like you reply, you actually reply. And text is this reply, or you forward, like to whom you forward, and text that you added, maybe some additional attachments. That's all it needs. So this command allows to the server to get this information and build the final message before it's being sent. Here's an example. In this example, we are doing smart reply. The mine here is just reply. You see, it's quite short. It's just what being added to reply. And here you see that this is item ID that I am replying to. So server will take this item, add this information, this reply on top of it, combine this message and send it. Any questions? Email synchronization. Sync command is being used, as I said, for synchronization, and item operations allow us to get entire message or attachments when needed. Hanging sync is the way to do push notifications. If client adds heartbeat or wait element in request, in sync request, and there is nothing for server to send back, server will hang on this. It will not respond at all until the timer that is the time interval provided in those elements, either this one or this one, is expired. When it expired, it will send back. There's nothing for me. I have nothing to you, but I am alive. Come back. Come back with next sync request. And there's actually quite intricate details how client and server can negotiate this interval. It's try and error, but initially they have a way to agree what is most optimal. Items are synchronized in chunks, usually 100 items at once. And more available is being transmitted if there's more. MIME supported and even can be truncated. And client can delete using sync, but cannot add email using sync. It's actually specific just for email. Calendaring, again, sync command. Used for different purposes. You can download meeting request, which is in inbox folder. You can download existing event into your calendar. You can upload from your calendar folder. Recorded meetings are submitted. You can also create a new calendar meeting as well. Sendmail is used to send meeting requests to attendees. Meeting response is response to invitation. And sendmail can be used to send response to along that. Resolve recipient command allows to allows client to search through a global address list and contacts and simplify the choice for the user. This is how it's being used most. You can also retrieve SMIME certificates and pictures. And it is also the way for client to request free busy info for information for every attendee. Here's an example. Here we're requesting availability information, freebies information for the attendee for one day, 24 hours. And what it really means, and it's given back in 30-minute intervals. 3 means out of office, 0 means free, 1 busy, and 2 means tentative. So this is how the time availability looks like for this recipient, this attendee, for requested time interval. Any questions? This is advanced. I noticed that very few clients are actually using this, but it's available through protocol. Contacts. Again, sync command, search is available. And the interesting thing is if you use collection ID RE, it's special collection ID, it actually has preset number. It will synchronize recipient cache, which is most often contacts with over and outlook. There are 67 fields that are supported. That's quite a lot. So to make clients, to allow clients to use, to work with only those fields that it care about, there is concept of hosted contacts. Client can specify fields that it supports. So supported fields, non-hosted fields, needs to be transmitted completely, like all of them needs to be transmitted. If one of them is missing in sync command, it means the client wants to delete it. Other non-supported or hosted fields are just preserved by the server on updates. Auto-discovery servers. The main protocol for auto-discovery and auto-discovery is generic thing that's being used by desktop clients. The main protocol is MSOX disk. ActiveSync clients use limited lightweight version of it. MSISCMD describes the process, like what is being used and how to use it. So the process for auto-discovery, again, I'm not going to go into deep details, I will just go into sequence of operations. But the process of auto-discovery needs to be done initially when the client is being set up. And then server can request it at any moment. Typical example is when mailbox is being moved. It doesn't use WBXML. Again, it's in fact, it's different from ActiveSync protocols. So first in UI, client asks a user for SMTP address. And then it uses this address in other discovery command. It sends auto-discovery command to two well-known URLs. If you can see here, contoso.com in this example is domain name. So those URLs use this domain name. The client uses this to format those URLs. And it sends response to them, it's whatever it chooses. It should get back a response from at least one of them. If it doesn't, then it means something is wrong. It can also get redirected. Any questions here? And I think finally, limitations. Let's talk about limitations first. Device management, supervision. It is based on client trust, as you probably noticed. Server has no way to know if client really did this. This is something that is being solved by in other ways, like Intune or Microsoft Intune or third-party solutions for advanced device management can be used to supplement what is provided by ActiveSync. But good thing here, what's good is that at least there is a way in protocol to do this, to require certain policies on the device. ActiveSync doesn't support all features for MIPI and TWS, and I'm not going to list all of what is not supported. But for example, no support for rules, no link integrations, no support for applications on mobile client. There are limitations on use of draft folder. It cannot be synchronized. And some limitations on meetings as well. And again, it's not complete list. But nevertheless, it provides quite extensive set of features. It is lightweight, so those are all advantages. Works well over poor data connections. It has multiple implementations on server and client. There are quite a few servers available, and clients, I don't need to tell that it's very widely used. It doesn't need to, a client doesn't need to implement everything. It can be a very lightweight solution. The only thing that needs to be done is WBXML and certain portion of MSI XCMD. But reconsumption is addressed, which is, I think, unique thing here. And again, device management capabilities are there. We have interoperability tools that are available for free for download. Protocol test suites. It is client side, or we actually had talk on protocol test suites, so I'm not going to go into deep details here. But generally speaking, every protocol test suite is client-side implementation of protocol. It is C#, we give you code. And for algorithms, you have, with that you will get reference implementation. Message analyzer has parsers for ActiveSync, and they are available as optional package. I have resources slides which shows them. And here's the slide. First is a reference to open specifications for Exchange Server. There are articles on TechNet which are quite useful. I give you some example here. There is also Exchange Team blog. Here is a quite interesting article. If you need to troubleshoot client-server communication using ActiveSync, and I think we had a question about this before, this describes in great details how to, first enable logging and how to interpret the logging.
Forums are available if you want to ask
questions, as well as DocHelp@Microsoft.com. And final two, links to protocol test suites and message analyzer. Questions? Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for Andrew Davidoff's wonderful speech. 接下来我们分享的主题是 Latest Exchange Features and Protocol Information. 让我们继续欢迎 Andrew. Next on, please welcome Andrew Davidoff, who will discuss Latest Exchange Features and Protocol Information. Let's welcome.
Thank you. Okay, in this talk I'm going to have two very separate sections. First, I'm going to talk about updates in Exchange Server Open Specifications since last Taipei PlugFest, which was about 1 year from now, about one year ago. I will give update on interoperability tools, and those tools are built around open specifications. After that, I'll talk about Exchange REST APIs for Office 365. This is new modern way to access Exchange Server information. And I think it will be interesting for you to know that it exists and where it's going. So what changed last year? ActiveSync, we documented ActiveSync versions 2.5 and 12.0. And with that, we have complete documentation for all major ActiveSync releases. We changed the structure of documentation slightly to increase usability. Change web services has a new protocol. It was just released a few days ago, I think. MS OXVS item ID. It's algorithm, web service item ID algorithm. It defines how to create and process EWS item ID. What it is? What it is, it describes how client and server generate item ID from storage type and internal exchange identifier. And this protocol is useful for both client and server. In fact, we had requests to document it from our customers. So now it is available. Other protocol changes. MyPHTTP document has improvements in other book operations. It is based on our testing and it's based on our customer feedback. More than 600 fixes on Exchange documentation set. In web services, we have quite a large number of changes and improvements. And here's a list of documents that happen to have a large number of fixes as well. I want to say that during this year, we went through extensive testing, test passes. So we improved document implementability accuracy. If you used old documentation, I highly recommend to switch to new one, to new updated ones. Test tools. We have new parsers for message analyzers. In fact, we have parsers for message analyzer. For ActiveSync, WS, RPC, and MapHTTP, Map Analyzer is a platform that we are being developing parsers from now on. With that, we are retiring the Exchange RPX extractor, or RPX. RPX is a tool that allow to see RPC or MAP traffic over the wire. That traffic is very complex, and we couldn't build parser for NetMon network monitor that can process that. Message analyzer is more. Message analyzer is more advanced, and we built RPC and MyPHTTP parsers there. We have new test suites for ActiveSync, web services, RPC, and MyPHTTP, as well as SharePoint and a lot of others. We had talks about this. Any questions on? The previous section. Okay, REST APIs. It was introduced quite recently, REST APIs for Exchange. It features mail, calendar, and contacts. And it is new, very powerful way to access Exchange server data. It is a modern API being used all across the industry. And today, it is available on the client, cloud, on Office 365. But it is, generally speaking, it is strategic direction for Exchange APIs and Exchange protocols, and it's definitely will be introduced on premise and in hybrid mode as well. So I'm talking about what's available today. And you can try it if you have Office 365 account, or you can request demo account, if you, development account, tenant, if you want to experiment with this. It, based on open standards, OAuth, JSON, and OData, OAuth is interesting. It allows granular access, granular permissions to user data. It's not like with old ways where a client had access to everything, it had user permission, user credentials. OAuth allows to make it so that client doesn't need to have user credentials. It goes through our authorization process using this protocol and gives and gets access to certain parts of data on certain level. API is web friendly and designed to enable web and mobile application developers. Again, we had several talks about this already, so very briefly. It is this the last block. It represents Exchange and Mail, Calendar, and Contacts APIs, what I'm going to talk about. And it's part of overall family that Office 365 offers. Briefly, this common consent framework for Office 365. What it means that application can request consent from user or administrator to access certain features. And here's an example. I don't see, I'm not sure if you can see this. But here's a list of his list of permissions that application is being used. Administrator or user can accept this request and grant this level of permissions or deny. The protocol is secure. There is no capturing of user credentials, as I already said, and access is fine-grained. And what's interesting, it uses long-term access. For long-term access, it uses refresh tokens. What it means is that client keeps refresh token, and this client uses normal token to access the data. And this token expires quite often, like probably every day in most cases. When it expires, it uses refresh token to get new access token. If user revokes some certain rights, then this refresh token will stop working. And this is how the relocation is being enforced. This protocol allows great level of discovery. You can discover Office 365 services, and it provides rich service metadata. And from now on, I'm talking about Exchange API specifics. There's rich metadata that describes types and entities that are being used in these APIs. They are explorable. This is just an example here. Like here, you can see the enum and what values are available. And this metadata is large. There's rich tooling. We have .NET SDK, which enables support for multiple applications, multiple development environments. It's quite rich environments. And separate Android and iOS SDKs are available as well. Let's talk about mail. Next three slides, I will talk about mail, calendar, and contacts in a little bit more details. First, for mail, we provide three levels of permissions: read, read-write, and send. For exchange users and exchange administrators, send-write for mail is extremely important. People are usually very hesitant to give application right to send mail. So this is very special. In most cases, just read permission is okay, or read write. Send mail is separate and is requested separately, so the client can say, no, I will not going to give you this right. And let me send the mail for you. Also, one more point, read-write is also interesting. If client reads the mail and has only read permission, it cannot mark mail as read. Because to stamp red flag, it needs write permission. The interesting hierarchy of objects, the collections, like the folder collection. For mail, they are collection of folders, and it contains individual folder. Folder contains messages, messages collection, and inside that, you can get to real messages. On the right, you see a list of actions that are allowed. CRUD is create, write, update and delete, which is quite common. Messages can have attachments as well. And here are some samples. Me is special name, meaning authenticated user. In this place, you can actually use other user ID. Folders is collection. And inbox is special name. You can use folder ID in this place. So you can see this. This is inbox's entity and the collection. We also have send mail API, intuitive API. The reason it's mentioned here is that it changed since beta. If you use beta version, the way how it works changed. Calendar. Two kinds of permissions, read and write. Read and read write, yeah. It has calendar groups. Calendar group contains individual calendar folders. And each calendar folder contains events. Calendar view, I will talk about it later, and events can also have attachments. You can access attachments. Here are samples. Calendar, this is a special name, meaning your default calendar. In this, in place of that, you can say calendars and calendar folder ID, and then request information about that in more details and keep going inside the hierarchy. The calendar view is the way to simplify client, the way to let client to show what's really happening in the user calendar. In this calendar for this day or week or certain time interval. The thing is that events can be recurring events. And I will show you an example of the difference between those two. So if you have, if you request events, then client needs to do recurrence expansion on its own. Client view gives you all recorded meetings already expanded. And just to refresh, the current meeting is when you say, hey, I want to have lunch with John every Monday at noon. contacts, permissions, read and read write. It's much more simplified collection, set of collections. You have multiple you can have multiple contact folders, and each of them contain contacts. What I want to mention here specifically is that those are your private contacts, those that you created in your mailbox. They are not contacts in Active Directory, they are not contacts in global address list. To access them, you need to use Azure Graph API. And here's samples. And as I say, you need to use Azure Graph APIs if you want to access global address book. And with that, okay, we'll go with demo. First of all, I have this mailbox. You can see it has several messages. It is on in this tenant in Office 365. I will use Postman, which is Google client extension. It's quite useful if you want to explore REST APIs. And I will use it to show how things works. When I started looking at this, REST APIs, I was amazed how simple it is to get access to Exchange Server. Like if you use AWS, you will need to spend some time, like maybe a week, before you implement everything to get connection, to get good connection. And for AWS, we have SDKs, which simplifies this significantly, so it may be shorter. For ActiveSync, there are no SDKs. And here, just native protocol can be used easily. So I'm going to send, first I'm going to show the metadata. So I'm going to send this request to Office 365, and I'm getting back metadata for the mail, for mail service. As you can see, it's quite large, and it gives you a way to discover what items, what operations are available, what actions are available. It is designed, of course, for programmatic view, but I just want to mention that this is here and easily accessible, and I actually look at it when I have questions. Let's try to get some messages. What I'm requesting here is first 5 messages in my mailbox. Let's send it. And I have, there's a lot of information, but you can see that the subject, body preview, which is nice. And large body of the message, which you can tell is HTML. And message properties from sender to whom it was sent. And interesting information here. One thing is it was never read. Is read is false. And at the end, you have URL to the next set of messages. Remember, I request the first 5. It says skip 5. You will get next if you execute this one. This is how you go through the entire set in chunks. Of course, it's a lot of information. So, OData actually has ways to filter. So, the beauty of those APIs is that it is filtered by by data. So let me filter by from date time received and subject. And I should get much smaller set of information. Some of this information I'm getting even without asking for that, like IDs. But this is just very limited set. And again, how to get next. You can use sort. Remember the first message here. March 25th. If I sort by daytime received, I should get much older message. Yes, from the bottom of my inbox. You can get counts. Here's the answer, 9. There are 9 messages with attachment. And another thing I want to show you here is this request. I am asking for messages with subject of the messages that has attachments. And you see, I have count, and I have 9 messages. The subjects. I want to reiterate how easy it is. It's just request. And yes, I'm using Postman, which may be hiding something, but try it. You can just type this URL in Google Chrome or Explorer. Send it, this URL. Send it. What you will get back is an authentication message from browser. In this message, you specify your account and password. But this URL doesn't tell you about account. Account is part of authentication. Once you do this and you maintain this browser session, you can submit those URLs and you will get base JSON or back JSONs. So you either need JSON Viewer or Google Chrome will show you that. Now, events. Let me show you first. Oops. I'm requesting event. What I'm requesting here is all events after, including and after March 26th. I get just one. But let's double check. I just want to show you the calendar. Here I have a calendar for this mailbox open. And you can see that there are quite a few events actually. This is lunch. This is the events that you've seen, but there are much more. They are all recurring. So to get them, I will use calendar view. toward immigration here is calendar view from March 26th today until Friday, until the Friday. And you can see that I have much more. Much more meetings, and they are actually sorted by start date. And there is no URL, meaning that this is it. And finally, contacts. You can, well, access to contacts is always simple, but you can filter by any property on the item, like for contacts have property called given name. You can search for contact with given name. Let me see, yeah, it's finding this contact and giving me all the fields in this contact that are available. Obviously, you can filter and search all the data is here. Any questions?
I have two questions. First one is, can we use the RESTful API for on-premise exchange server? The second one is, if I deploy the hybrid mode for exchange server, can I use the RESTful API connected to Office 365 and retrieve data from the on-premise server?
Good questions. Very good questions. Unfortunately, the answer to both of them is not yet. But those REST APIs are strategic. They are going to be expanded. It's modern APIs. It's clear that this is where industry is going. I cannot tell you when. I can only tell you that it is coming. So my recommendation for you is use this to understand how it works. Become familiar. You can build like applications now. You can submit them to Windows Store. You can submit them to Exchange Office 365 application, right? Or just explore those APIs. They're very powerful. And this will give you advantage when this is, when it's available on-prem. You have advanced knowledge of this. Certain things will change, like discovery definitely will be different. And I don't know how it will be implemented. Today, it just can't, it's not something that announced the dates or availability. But the only thing I can tell, it's coming. And this is the reason why I'm giving this talk. I know that you are more interested in on-prem. There's, you need to probably do more to promote Office 365 from Taiwan, in Taiwan. But this is a way for you to explore. And again, there are ways for you to request a dev tenant, which is free for 30 days, and you can play with this, with it. I definitely recommend doing this. And I will give you resources, I will give you links how to do it. We also have sandbox APIs. Well, first you need to have tenant. You need to have account to work with players. But I will talk about this later in resources, what else is available for you. Any other questions? You will get access to this presentation, so I'm just giving you sample URLs that you can use to start exploring. And here's a list of resources that I want to mention. First, dev.office.com is a gateway where we're extending it significantly. It is already in it is already major gateway to Office development links and tools. So go there, go to getting started. As I mentioned, there is Sandbox, API sandbox, you can use SDKs. You can just play with it. There is a real tenant with real data. You don't own it, but you can build your requests. You can build. You can start. You can look how SDK works. And this is a great point to start exploring. This one. There's training available. And one thing I want to mention, that API endpoints for REST APIs in China for, are different. Here's a link to them. Questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for Andrew Davidoff's wonderful speech. Thank you. 感谢 Andrew Davidoff 的精彩演说。